You're watching Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast, and this is episode number 34. Hi everyone, and thanks so much for watching this episode of Tim Topham TV, when we'll be talking to Laura Kahar, an amazing teacher from Sydney, Australia, who is totally crushing it with group events, and not just building a thriving studio because of it, she's also building a whole piano community around it. And we're going to talk much more about community during this episode, which is why we're calling it all about building a piano community that students love. Now, you're going to love Laura. She is like one of my favorite teachers of all time. She has so much energy. She's just kind of young and go get 'em and has done some amazing things in her life already. But before we get into the interview, I do want to talk about today's sponsor, which is Group Lessons 101. Now, you might have heard about this if you're following any Facebook groups or following any other blogs, because there's getting a lot of talk at the moment, because Tracy Selly and Sarah Campbell have created an amazing new series of webinars all about group teaching, which just suits this month on the blog so beautifully. So I'm really happy to promote this. I've had a look at it, and the quality, as always, is fantastic. So not only are you going to get a whole lot of interviews with teachers who are actually in the trenches doing this stuff with their students, running summer camp, running group games, teaching only groups, whatever it is, they're giving away worksheets, they're giving away teaching videos. This course is fantastic. And I'm really, really thankful to Tracy and Sarah, who are giving all my viewers 10% off access. So to find out more and get the access code, head to timtopham.com/upbeat. Okay, so let's get into today's episode. The show notes will be at timtopham.com/episode34. You can, of course, watch this on YouTube. You can watch it on my website, or you can access it via the iTunes podcast player. Remember, too, what I said last week, having a few little issues with downloads on the iTunes, the podcast player on Apple iPhones. So if you are having that trouble, please download the Overcast app. It's free. It's a great podcast player, and you'll have no issues with downloads. I'm not going to talk too much about Laura, because you'll just get the hang of her like instantly and what she's all about. But look, she has a CTMUS-A and an ATMUS-A. They're both teaching diplomas from the Australian Music Examination Boards. She studied with Tess Hill, a fantastic and really well-known teacher in Perth, one of the best over there. And she has just extended her own personal teaching through doing these courses and developed her own kind of ways and methodologies. Just having a look on her website, it says here, during her years as a piano teacher, Laura has developed her own distinctive style of teaching. With a primary focus on the young beginner, Laura believes in the importance of learning through encouragement and fun. And I tell you what, some of these group activities that she has going and the themes and things like that you're going to find out about today are all about fun. So I'm going to stop talking, because I'm just going to let her give away all her secrets, tell us how she does it. And I know you're just going to love this interview with Laura Kahar. Hello, Laura, and welcome to the show today.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Well, look, we met as a result of a podcast that I'm actually going to be releasing a bit later in the year regarding teaching diplomas. So I know a little bit about your background, but can you tell everyone else sort of how you came to be where you are at the moment with what you're doing in your studio, how many students you've got, where you are in the world, that sort of thing?
Sure. My teaching adventure began 12 years ago as a result of a lost poker game.
Okay, this is not what I was expecting at all.
That's another story, but never in my wildest dream did I ever think I'd be a teacher, let alone a piano teacher. I guess I was one of those, not trying to be racist here, but typical Asian child that had a tiger mum and, you know, pursued the whole piano, everything was piano, piano, piano. I lost love of piano and kind of gave it up for a little bit, but then because of teaching, found my journey back to piano, and now I'm here where I am. I started teaching in Perth, WA, where I... from the lost bet, my mum called up my teacher again, and she took me on completing my CTMUS-A, which is your certificate of music teaching, which I continued to study the diploma, which is the ATMUS-A, I built my studio, which I think the first year I had about 7 students. And when I left Perth 5 years later, I had a wonderful collection of 40 lovely kids. And then I moved to Sydney.
Wow, so you lost all those students effectively?
I did, yeah. I did. We ended up with a finale. They became my flower girls and my page boys for my wedding.
Oh, cute.
That was the big finale, and we had our last Christmas concert. Came to Sydney. I thought, you know what, I'll give the corporate world a go because that's what I always, my life ambition. And I started missing teaching, so I taught a handful of students just for my sanity, for my balance.
What corporate work were you doing, Laura?
I was general manager for Bell Property.
Okay.
So doing project marketing, real estate, marketing sales, yeah. And then in 2013, I said goodbye to the corporate world. And January 2014, I found myself in front of the computer for 2 weeks. I set up my website, and of course I had, you know, the handful of students, told the parents to help advertise, I guess. And now I have a lovely studio of 70 private students.
Wow.
From 3 years old to teen years.
Wow, what a great story. So, I mean, you've built one studio in Perth, thriving, loving it, decide to move to Sydney, start from scratch again.
Yep.
You build a studio of 70. You obviously are doing something very well. And that's what I want to find out more about today. Look, you've got such an amazing energy. I love talking to you. And I hope everyone else is watching this rather than just listening, because, you're a great person to interact with. And I can't wait to hear some of these other ideas that you've got. One of the things what's that?
You're making me blush.
one of the things that I picked up you said was that you lost your love of piano.
Yes.
Why was that?
I think just because I wasn't able to have any life outside of piano. And fortunately, you know, don't want to blame them, but it was my parents' fault. But, you know, they tried their best.
Yeah.
But also I think when I was in high school, I'm such an extrovert, and social life was such a big thing for me. And the piano was, it's a lonely instrument. Mm-hmm. And in school band, you can't really be a part of it. You'll get put on the glockenspiel or the xylophone or percussion.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I did 2 years of triangle just standing there doing the things. But I think I just wanted that social interaction as a piano player. I think the routine of the practice, it wasn't doing anything for me. So, and I guess that's why this whole group lesson, our topic, our chat today came about.
Mm, cool. I'm interested, just before we get onto that too, you mentioned you had a tiger mum, and you're Asian, so that's okay. You're allowed to say those things. I thought that was quite funny. How do you, because, you know, obviously a number of us, have parents who are like that.
Yeah.
And it sounds like your parents' pressure actually, it gave you the skills you needed, but it may not have given you the love that you would have liked. So yeah. I wonder, you've got a pretty insider's kind of view of this. Do you have any tips, just before we get started on the group thing, about working with parents like that, who you see just pushing and, not hitting their kids, but, just driving them almost lovelessly through exams, yeah, and that sort of thing. Do you have any tips for us as teachers about how we can help those parents understand what a real love of music is?
Absolutely.
Or is that another whole podcast?
I think it could be, but for me, and this is one thing that I really learned in the CTMSA and ATMSS, the first initial interview when you have with that parent and that student is the most crucial part of the whole learning experience. And that's where you find out, you know, with the tiger mums and everything. And that's when you, as a teacher, have to really stand up and say, this is how I teach. For me, my philosophy is on the love of music and the holistic approach or whatever it is. It's about process rather than the end goal. And if you both connect, if your philosophies connect, then they should be your student. But if your philosophies don't connect with the parent, that's where I say, you know, good luck. Here are a list of other teachers. That's it. I think the first interview is just so important. And if you don't have that, that's where all the problems spiral.
And do you think most difficult parents, or ones that wouldn't work with your own sort of way of teaching, would it be quite obvious at that first interview? Is that your experience?
Absolutely, yeah. And even, you know, I give them a probation period as well for a term. You know, if we can't work together in the first term, then, yeah, sorry.
I think it's only reasonable. And you're in a position with so many students that you're able to do that, which is great.
Yeah, but I think because, you know, again, that first interview, if you just put down what you believe, how music is and your philosophy, then and if the parents share that same philosophy, then it's great. And it is a working relationship. I mean, I was always taught that piano learning is a triangle relationship. It's not just the student and the teacher. It's student, parent, teacher. Mm. And without that parent, it doesn't work at all.
Mm. Yeah. Some great tips for us all. Let's talk now more about, we'll move into the kind of a group teaching thing. So this is part of Group Teaching Month. And the thing I wanted to talk to you about was that you've got this, fantastic big studio. And you've just started doing some group or class-based activities. You haven't revolutionized your teaching. You haven't bought 300 keyboards. You haven't employed 20 staff. You know, it's just you doing your own thing, but you've added this extra bit. And that's why I thought it'd be great talking to you about how you actually went about doing that. So in terms of your students, do you teach, is it just you, or do you have someone helping you teach, or do you teach all the 70 students?
Just me for the time being. I am in the process of training a teacher at the moment, but just me.
Okay. And so, and they are all what we'd say the normal one-on-one lessons.
Absolutely. Yep. The normal half an hour or 45 minutes or 1 hour lesson.
Great. All right. So tell us about the classes that you've added then. How do they work? What's the point of them? And what are some of the benefits, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So I've always had weekly private lessons as well as a monthly group lesson in my teaching, and I've done this for the last 12 years. Why I did it, I guess because I grew up with a weekly private lesson as well as a group lesson, but my private lesson and were weekly private lessons as well as weekly group lessons. So I was in and out of piano twice a week.
Okay. Was that a Yamaha thing or anything, or was it just what your private teacher did?
Correct.
Yes. Okay. Great.
That's Hill.
Yeah. Oh, it was Tess. All right. Whoever, everyone will meet in the podcast because she's the one that I interview later on. There you go.
So Tess had a Monday junior group lesson, 5:20 to 6 o'clock, and she had a Tuesday senior group lesson, 5:20 to 6 o'clock, and she's had that for I think all her career. Yeah, all the last 3 decades maybe.
Right. So, okay. So you've taken on this idea because you've seen that it works, and you obviously enjoyed it because you said you were social, amongst other things.
Yeah. So with Tess, I mean, growing up, the group lessons were more for a performance group lesson with Tess. You know, we sat around, performed, and kind of gave each other's comments on how we performed, I guess. She used it more of a performance base, where my group lesson, I've taken the idea, but I like to make, I'll do a lot more theory work in my group lessons as well, and as well as exposing to ensemble playing and duets and having the little, I call it a piano community.
Great. So how many of the group sessions do you run each month?
Okay,
or is it per term? What do you do?
It's per term. We do 2 group lessons, week 4 and week 8. And the reason why I choose week 4 and week 8 because it gives the students to prepare for the first 3 weeks, and then they do their group lesson, and then they prepare again for their week 8.
Okay. And for people listening from overseas, the Australian school system is based on 4 terms of 10 weeks each. So Laura's saying, yeah, about halfway through each of the term and at the end of term, more or less, is when you do them.
Absolutely, yeah. So they come for their weekly private lessons, and then week four and week eight, they come for a 1 hour group lesson.
Okay.
Each group is, they're grouped by their age group and year group.
Okay.
And I have seven groups. So I have a preschool and kindy group, which we call the little musicians.
Yeah.
And then I have my year ones, and then your twos, your threes, your fours, your fives, and then your six and above.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in that week, you're teaching 7 hours extra time on top of, I assume they have their normal weekly lessons during that week, or does everything stop?
No, they have their normal weekly lesson, and okay. My group occurs on a Sunday. I know Sundays are one of those days where people don't normally work, but yeah. For me and my parents' community, I say to them, Sunday is music day. We have our concerts on Sundays. We have our group lessons on Sundays. So anything that we need to do extra, it's always going to be a Sunday.
Okay. And let's face it, it's only twice every 10 weeks or thereabouts anyway.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. That must be exhausting. Do you do back-to-back on the Sunday, those different classes?
Back-to-back, straight.
Wow.
And now I'm currently breastfeeding at the moment, so I run into the bathroom. 10 minutes, I'm like, give the kids an activity and do express some milk and then come back. So
it's hysterical. Laura, I should give you the backstory that we were running a little bit late today with the recording because Laura had some baby issues to deal with. She has a beautiful seven month old, isn't it?
I do.
So you're amazing. Teaching 70 kids, working 7 hours every Sunday, once every 3 weeks or whatever it is, and a little baby. You're amazing. Let's talk about what actually happens in these classes, because I can imagine there'll be teachers listening who go, I could probably do that. That sounds cool. But what do I do? I've got, 10 kinder kids at once. I would freak out personally. Well, I imagine the content depends on the age group, but absolutely. Are there some similarities, sorts of things you do with young ones, sort of things you do with the middle ones, sort of things you do with the older ones?
Yes. So I use group lessons to reinforce a topic that I really want them to revise. So, for example, in the last Sunday was our first group lesson for 2016, and practice is our theme. Term one is normally about practice and just revising how to practice properly, how to practice efficiently. That topic is covered with all the groups, but conveyed, of course, in a different way because of the different age groups.
Sure.
So with the little musicians, I don't really, that's the only group that I don't revise the topic. They do more of a body movement. They do piano keyboard exploration. They do singing. So it's a more kinder music beat class.
Okay. About how many would be in that class?
There's six.
Six, okay, cool.
So for the little ones, I don't do, so for the little musician under five, I don't do more than six. And then for the year ones and twos, I don't do more than eight. And then the other groups are between 10 and 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I imagine that it depends completely on how many students you've got at each year level. I mean, you might have 30 beginners out of your 70 one year and only a few teenagers or something, or does it almost always balance?
Luckily for me, it's balanced. luckily for me, 80% of my students come from all the same school. So they know each other from school. So for them, it's like an extra day that they see each other.
Well, that's really interesting. So has that come about because you've marketed to that school?
So I had one amazing mother who was my personal advertising guru that when she found out I was going to go full-time teaching, she just spread my name and it's just come from there. Unfortunately, I haven't advertised. I've just put a website up and it's been through word of mouth, my studio group.
Wow. Goodness me. Isn't that amazing? One advocate. Wow, we all need a mum like that, don't we?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. You definitely do, yeah.
Okay, so for the little ones, you're doing off the bench stuff, you're singing, you're chanting, you might like kind of orf or, kadais or whatever. Things that like that. Let's talk about that kind of middle band. You talk about the theme and you give them you remind them about how to practice. So do you do some activities like, okay, one after each kid's going to come up and show me how you'd practice this, or is that too boring? I don't know.
Yeah, so we go through the whole topic and the concepts, and then we have a mind map. So we sit around a circle, discuss the topic, and then everybody suggests an idea of how they can, you know, practice more efficiently and things like that. And then we introduce a challenge. So this term, the challenge, is called the Efficient Practice Challenge. And I sneaked it off a wonderful website called Teach Piano Today. It's all about them doing a challenge each week from a challenge sheet, and then them collecting a fish. And then at the end of the challenge, they'll win a prize. And the prize is going to be a fighting fish.
Okay. Well, an actual fighting fish.
An actual fighting fish. So they compete against people in their group.
Okay.
And you'll be surprised. Like, this week, the practice has been amazing.
How interesting.
Yeah. So, and they do that. And we do this every single term, like different challenges. And they compete against people in their group. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's what the group lessons work so beautifully, because they know exactly who they're competing against and they know what the challenges are, and it's not competing against everybody else in the whole studio, because 70 kids is too much to compete with, I think.
Yeah. I like this idea of community. I think you've used exactly the right word, because they're building up a community. They know that it's the same six kids each group class during the year. They're going to grow and learn together. They're going to get to know each other really well. And they're doing these little competitions. I think it's great.
Thanks.
Really good thinking. Interestingly, I interviewed Anita Collins recently. It was all about motivation and brain science. And we talked about extrinsic rewards.
Wow.
And she was saying, I wrote a blog post a little while ago saying, you know, I don't believe in extrinsic rewards. We've got to make sure it's intrinsic motivation. But she said, no, it's totally fine, because you really have to start with that, and that develops the inner motivation. Do you find that's what happens with your guys?
Yes, definitely. And I'm very much a person that if you do good, I'll reward you. Like, I'm very much a you give what you get type of teacher. Yeah. So my studio is just full of a lot of extrinsic motivation. We have another challenge called the Hall of Fame, which is taken on the idea from the 40-piece challenge. But our Hall of Fame, it doesn't stop. There's no number to it. They have they get 10 in their Hall of Fame when they've perfected a piece, I guess, and then they swap that for a gift voucher, and they keep collecting till the end of the year, again competing against the people in their group, and then at the end of the year, whoever wins from their group gets a trophy and the runners-up gets a medal, and they love it. We've been doing it for the last 3 years, and you know, they every year they want to try and beat their last year's score. So yeah, I think extrinsic motivation works really well. And kids nowadays, they get everything, so if you don't give them something, I don't think it works.
Yeah. How do you keep track of all? It sounds like you've got a lot of things going on, you know, scores to keep track of, or how many points people have. How do you do all that? Do you do it online, or do you have a wall chart?
Yeah, so our Hall of Fame is on the back of the studio door. So everybody walks in and they can see it. It's a visual thing. The efficient practice, we've created a Music and Me See. So I've got my studio is two levels. So the stairs, just like you, it's all seaweeds from just crepe paper and lots of bubbles. And how they collect the fish is they've got a little sandwich bag and they put the fish in there, and that's their little net.
Oh, that's very cute. Yes. Very creative.
Very visual. Because I think, you know, when you're doing challenges, it's so much better that they can see what's happening and see how they're going, rather than us keeping it in a file and kept away and no one looking at it. And it's great for the parents as well. When they come in, they see how their kids are going. You know, I don't have the parents don't have to stay for my students' lesson. They pop in and out. But when they pop in, they know exactly where to look to see how their child is going. And I know you shouldn't really compare, but I guess having it visually there, they can see, oh, okay, well, how come they've got 3 and my child's only got 1? What's you know, what are we doing wrong, I guess.
Or what is my child doing enough of? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I can see positives and and negatives, I guess, for that. I mean, if a child's trying their hardest and they're putting all their effort in, but they just struggle, then that's going to show up on the chart, but it won't look quite right, I guess. But.
Yeah. And I guess that's the reason why I have so many different challenges, because the challenges are all different type of challenges. You know, the Hall of Fame is for someone who will always... who are more quick learners and they learn lots of repertoires, where I have other students who, you know, they like to just concentrate on one piece and get it really, really perfect. And, you know, and that's why the efficient practice works really, really well for them. So, yeah, just to accommodate all the different personalities I have, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I love it. Yeah. Have you got any examples of your other challenges just off the top of your head? Just a couple more?
We do the second group lesson of term one for the last 12 years has always been Easter. So we always do an Easter egg hunt around the studio, but it's a plastic egg. Right. So the plastic egg opens up and there's like little challenges to do inside the plastic egg. Okay. And they'll take that for the last remaining 2 weeks of the term. And again, that's just different challenges and it's more personal challenges for them.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we do? Oh goodness, so many. performance challenges. So we do more like an X Factor style performance challenges. We have a mid-year recital in June, at the end of June, term two. So the group lesson before that, we have a little X Factor challenge performance thing just to get them prepped up for the recital.
Yep.
What else do we do?
Do you do sight reading or duet playing or?
Absolutely. Yeah. So all the ensemble work we do more towards term three and term four, getting ready for our end of year concert, which is our biggest showcase. I guess I pride myself in my concert because we have so much fun. Every year it's themed and they learn about the theme starting from term three, and that's where they they do their duets and their trios and their ensemble playing. And last year we had Australian composers. So In the Land Down Under was our theme. Okay. And each group studied a different Australian composer. They had to research about their composer. And I was so fortunate and grateful enough for Joe Koshy and Daniel McFarlane to do a Skype session with the kids.
Oh, brilliant.
A group lesson. And, the motivation after that Skype session, the kids, I think they took ownership and they didn't want to let the composers down in the performance. So I thought last year was actually one of my best performance level concert, just because they just had that ownership and they were able to relate and thought, oh, wow, my composers are still alive today and I don't want to disappoint them and they're just normal people like us. And Alyssa Mule wrote back to us in a Facebook message telling us about what she loves outside of piano and they're all like, wow, they actually do things besides music, which was crazy, which was great. So, yeah.
Teachers have a life outside their work. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
That is so good. I mean, so many great ideas, Laura. I absolutely love all this stuff you're sharing with us. It's brilliant. We've talked kind of about the youngest ones, the middle ones. I'm not sure the kind of teenager ones would go for the fish kind of idea. Maybe I'm wrong. They do?
They do.
What kind of things do you tend to do with the older ones?
Okay, so with the older ones, they want to do the same challenges as the little ones.
Okay.
And with the older ones, I give them buddies. So when they get to year 6, 7, they become my little apprentice. I call them my little minions, I guess. And they take a buddy on from one of the younger groups and they help them. So they become their little mentor. They help check in on them. Usually I like to do them on the same day. They'll come visit their group lesson. They'll, you know, assist any way they can and they pass on suggestions on practice on how to learn, how to play games and things like that. It's worked really, really well at the concerts because I have them. I end up going back to, I can look after backstage where they sit next to their buddy and they'll take them on stage and they'll bring them back. And they're the ones that teach them how to bow and things like that. So, yeah, they're my little minions, the future teachers of the teachers of the next generation, I guess. And with them, I do more theory work. So we're at the moment, they're all studying their grade one theory. And rather than sitting down and doing their activities, we learn a theory concept in games. And then they go home and they do their theory homework, 4 weeks worth of theory homework. And then in the next group lesson, I guess they hand me in the book before the group lesson and then they get their homework back. And any mistakes or any, you know, things that they can improve on, we discuss it as a group. And I find they learn so much better and they remember so much faster rather than me trying to teach it to them one-on-one.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a much more efficient use of your time. And that's, I guess, what I'm keep coming back to with any of these kind of group things. You can only, you've only got a certain amount of time that you can spend one-on-one with people before you're exhausted and you've got no more time left anyway. So, you know, I guess there's a reason why schools have classrooms of 30 kids in them. Can you imagine the expense if it was all one-on-one? But, you know, it's one-on-one is great for certain things and there's no doubt that, you know, teaching one-on-one when it comes to refining technique and all that kind of stuff at a higher level is really important. But that's why I really think that what you're doing, that complete mix, I'm still teaching one-on-one, that's completely normal, but here's an additional way of you know, benefiting the students by getting them together, they're learning together, we can explore some other topics. You know, I think it's just such a great addition to your studio. Really, really good. I'm not surprised that you've got 70. I'm surprised you don't have many more. I think you might, I think you might in the future.
One person only. So I think I'm to my limit at the moment.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Sounds exhausting, but very rewarding. So let's actually talk about that. What's the biggest impact that this has had on your studio, adding these classes?
Yeah, look, I think... I teach in a suburb called Mossman, and there are a few piano teachers, but because I have the group classes, that's how it makes me different. So that's my little niche. And when I tell the parents about it, you would think, oh, it's too another commitment, but they absolutely love it. And I call it a piano community. Mm-hmm. I tell the parents, you know, one of the reasons why a lot of piano players do quit in their teenage years is because they get bored. They're by themselves. They don't know how to apply the piano in a community or in a social environment, I guess. And they don't know how to seek the opportunity. So by me giving the group lessons, it's just an opportunity so my students can see this is what else I can do with my skill. This is what else I can do with my piano. At the moment, I'm trying to work really hard with the school I'm involved with most for a piano ensemble because I practically teach all their piano students. I would love to see piano ensembles in schools rather than just the piano player being put on the percussion area. And also because I have a focus on child development, I've had the opportunity to write music programs and music curriculum for a childcare centre. So I've been doing that for the last 8 months and it's worked really well. So I create their curriculum and I train their teachers and they apply it to their childcare centre.
That's huge.
Yeah, and that's what I guess the group lesson has really, really rewarded me with. Yeah. I'm only one person that can share my love with 70 students, but if I can do the childcare centre, then that's 600 students. Yeah.
Absolutely. Where did you learn to do all this?
I don't know. Look, I think, to be honest, I think I have my confidence because I grew up, you know, seeing the group and the private lesson. I've always loved being a part of band. Again, I'm a social person. I don't like doing things by myself. I think having people doing things with other people was so much better and more fun. And I wanted my students to have that as well. I go on Pinterest a lot, Facebook, YouTube. I read a lot of books. I went to the Sydney or the Canberra Australian Piano Pedagogy Conference where I met the Fishers, Christopher Fisher and I think it's Catherine Fisher, husband and wife, from Ohio University, and they were doing group classes as well. So I got a few ideas from them, read his book. His book is very, very good. Actually, this is his book, Teaching Piano in Groups, Christopher Fisher. Cool. That's a very good book. Yeah, and I became, because of this, I became interested in Dalcroze. I became interested in the Kadai, in Orff. I go to the Dalcroze summer programs. I'm not much of a singer, so for me, Kadai was a big, it was last on my
list. Too far, yeah.
Yeah, it was last on my list. But again, because, you know, if you want to improve as a teacher, you improve on yourself as well. So I'd love to do some singing lessons if I can find the time this year. Yeah, I think you just have to motivate yourself. If you want to do something, just go about and do it. I know it sounds optimistic, but yeah, just do it. That's my motto. Just do it.
Are there any good websites that you found for activities that you can use?
Or
books, I guess, other than the one you've just mentioned?
Yeah, Teach Piano Today is fantastic. For little kids, Let's Learn Music. I'll put this down. I should have done this for you before, but
that's okay.
And I'll put you together a list of the website that I've used.
That would be great. We'll put a list of your recommended resources on the show notes. That'd be great.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I also take like individual ideas as well and just turn them into groups. I think because I've been doing it for so long now, I have the confidence on how to turn it around. But if I can do it, any piano teacher can do it. It's not tricky. And it's so much more fun. You see the change in the students as well and how they interact, not only with you and with other peers, because one-on-one is very different to a social environment.
Absolutely. Now, what about financial impact? Do you charge for these group sessions, and how's that sort of improved your income?
Yeah, so I should be charging more, but I charge $12.50 per group lesson for an hour per student, because I have the numbers. And it covers, I guess, materials and my cost a little bit.
I would have thought you could charge much more than that, I would have thought.
Yes, I think you probably could. You probably can.
Yeah.
But I haven't, and I should.
Well, so for a class of six or 10, let's say, it's about, you know, $120 or, you know, something like that. For an hour when you would otherwise get, I don't know, six or, you know, 70, whatever the going rate is, you know, in your area. Mm-hmm. So it's still more income.
Absolutely. It is still more income, and it's because it's back to back, it's kind of just quick money as well for the week. Initially, when I first started teaching, the group lesson wasn't a money-making thing for me. I think it was more of giving the kids opportunity. But now, it's only now that I realize that it is what makes my teaching a little bit different, and I could make more money from it, but I haven't.
Well, it's obviously, as you said, a big point of difference. And I love that, you know, I've really had to draw out of you the financial impact. You know, it's clearly the finances is really nothing to do with it for you. It's about all these benefits you've been talking about. It's the fact that you clearly love doing it, which I think is great. So, and I hope other teachers look at it that way. It's like, well, it's a great idea. Oh, and you can make some extra money from it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. But yes, definitely you can make extra money from it. Mm. And I think you can definitely at least charge a minimum of $20 an hour per child, considering of all the activities that we do. And I also forgot to mention, like, I end my group lessons with an art activity. I'm a big believer where they have to do activities, and then they have quiet time, and they have reflection. And through the reflection, that's where they'll write something about the experience, or they'll put it into an art activity.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. Really creative.
Hey.
Okay, so look, let's start. We'll start kind of wrapping it up. What would you say? Let's say teachers listening and going, I really like this idea. I think I could do it, but I don't think I can do all of that at once. Where do they start? What would you recommend teachers could do to get started with this?
Yeah, I think the easiest starting point would probably be do a group for a performance. I think if you tell the parents this is just an opportunity to teach the kids how to perform, you know, to a performance opportunity for the students, I think the parents will be on board, and why not? You know, they're learning the piano. They don't have the performance opportunity unless they play at school assemblies or they play it to families and friends. And in that group scene, they learn from each other, they get feedback, and I think that's the easiest, most cost efficient. You don't have any materials required. Go watch an X Factor show on YouTube, get some ideas on how to judge, and you know, you can make a game out of it as well.
So it'd be more like I was picturing a masterclass at first, but no, you're not talking about that. You're just a performance, kind of like a recital.
Correct, yeah. Just in a group. So maybe a teacher has 20 students, do a junior and a senior, like what Tess used to do. And, so the junior kids come together for maybe 45 minutes, an hour, and they all perform to each other. And then the senior kids do the same, and they'll give each other scores if you want to. If you don't want to have that competitiveness, then just maybe, I don't know, say three good things about the performance, one thing that they can improve on, and that really helps the student a lot. So that's the most cost efficient. It's free. It's in your time. Exactly.
Yeah. Great. Good tactic. Do you know, in fact, of any written curriculum that exists for this kind of thing?
For group classes
run by piano teachers at different age levels.
No.
I don't either.
No. Maybe I should start one. No, I'm kidding.
I can imagine, like, just a book of activity ideas, I guess. I mean, I'm sure there's other things for classroom music teachers that would have crossover.
Yeah.
But I can't think of anything that's specific for group.
No, I can't either. No, and even Teach Piano Today has amazing resources, but they do it more for their whole studio, and I just kind of take the main game ideas or challenge ideas and turn it into piano student activities. There you go.
That's cool. okie dokie. So I'd have to ask this question. Where do teachers go to sign up to work with you? I think you're going to have people listening going, I want to work for this girl.
Yeah. My whole dream is to create a piano community. I think the world needs it. I think Australia needs it. We're so individualized, you know, and it needs to be more. Like, piano can't just be for a solo player. It needs to be more.
Yeah. I love it. And you're having great results from it already, so it obviously works.
Thanks.
Oh, brilliant. All right. Well, look, I think they're the main things I wanted to say. Is there anything else that I've kind of missed asking you that we've glossed over, or anything that could help?
I think maybe the question is, you know, how much time preparation-wise?
Yeah.
So, look, I do a lot of my teaching prep during the summer break in January, where I don't teach, and for me, I work, but I think about the whole year. And you have to, with group teaching, you have to be absolutely organized. Mm-hmm. If not, it doesn't work. And the more organized you are, the more cost effective you are as well, because you start buying materials online. And I love small businesses, and I do support small businesses, but when you are teaching in a group setting, it does get costly, especially with all the materials you need. So if you can save money and buy things overseas and from online, then it's fantastic. When you're more organized, you can reuse the materials as well. And look, one of the things that my blue group, which are my older students, made 4 years ago was this piano keyboard, which Joy Moran has on her website. It's just a little 3D piano thing. And my blue group 4 years later still have it, and they use it for their scales. And it's their little keyboard that, you know, they made when they were 8 years old, and now they're 12 and 13. And is there something little special things? So, preparation is key. Organization. Think of a theme. I love themes. It just makes everything so much easier because you go back to it. Think of a topic and, you know, and keep it simple. You know, that's just it as well. You can do so much with groups. And when I first started, I wanted to do everything, But the years go on and you learn to just keep it simple, and the kids love it. Absolutely. Yeah.
Pat, would you be able to share some of your theme ideas when you send me some links to some of those resources?
Yeah, sure. That'd be good,
just to get the minds ticking over. I love the ideas of themed recitals too. Themes generally, yeah, it's a great concept, which is why I'm theming my months this year on the blog.
Themes are fantastic.
That's it.
Yeah, especially when you can dress up too. Yeah.
Now, where can teachers find you? Do you have a website? Where can they get in touch with you if they've got some questions?
Sure. So my website is musicnfinelli.me.com.au. If you go into the About Teachers section, then you can find out a little bit more about me. And if you go into the photo album, you'll see all my group activities and my concerts as well. And hopefully you'll get some ideas on what everything that I've been blabbing about. And all my contact details are there. No blog yet. I would love to do a blog. I just, the baby came as
finally
a
big don't have time.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm trying to be a good mother as well as a good teacher. So, but my baby loves it. I mean, you know, and I have 70 babysitters waiting. So
it's that's beautiful. True.
Yeah. They've all said, you know, they want to babysit.
Oh, isn't that cute?
It's great. That's my community, you know, community. It's a big thing. Big thing. Yeah.
It's great. All right. I reckon we'll wrap it up there. Thank you so much for your time. I can't wait. Next time it's Sydney. You're in Sydney, aren't you? Next time I'm up there, we're definitely going to grab a coffee and continue this conversation because it's so good.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Tim.
No worries at all. We'll speak to you again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, bye.